This is a Pinball News production.
Hello, I'm Jerry Stellenberg, and this is David Thiel. And today we're going to talk about, yes, the Lexi Lightspeed and the Multimorphic P3 platform, but more specifically, we're going to talk about technologies that we use and technologies that we're creating to try to give you a pinball playing and owning and operating experience that is more advanced than what we're used to. We're trying to create new things and give people an opportunity to experience more immersive gameplay and a lot of other things to improve that experience. So for the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years, the large majority of people in the industry, including myself, have been throwing around the term innovation. What is innovation? Who's innovating? Who's not innovating? What features are innovative? And if you talk to a bunch of different people about innovation, you'll get a lot of different definitions of what that word means. And you get a lot of different ideas about what makes something innovative. So at least for the purposes of this talk, I'm no longer going to use the word. In fact, every time I use the word, the first new person to raise their hand or say something out loud, hopefully something funny, hopefully something clean and funny, John, just identify the fact that I said the word innovation and I'll toss you a free t-shirt, or one of us will toss you a free t-shirt. And yep. All right, who was it? Thanks, Brandon will be the t-shirt passer out or person. So we have a bunch of different t-shirts, and feel free to come back to the booth in the game room after the seminar, and we'll swap out the size or the style or whatever and get you hooked up. So every time I say the word innovation, you're welcome. All right, who was first? All right, so instead of that word, we're going to talk about these technologies, but I'm not going to talk about theoretical ideas, things we could someday implement, or things that we're thinking about implementing. Instead, what I want to do is show you exactly what we have implemented. And specifically, I want to show you within the context of Lexi Lightspeed, show you how we're using some of these new technologies to make the gameplay more immersive. So I'm going to demo this directly on the screen, or on the machine, and I'm going to ask TJ, where's TJ? TJ's one of our mechanical engineers, and he's going to walk around and point the camera at all of the individual things I'm talking about as I do this. This is the Blair Witch pinball experience. Okay, so we have the machine here. Let's be clear about what we're talking about. We're talking about something we call the P3 pinball platform. And we call it a platform. And that platform word, I need to define it because it's a little bit ambiguous in a sense. So platform to us means a combination of a lot of things. It means something that we can use to create pinball games. It's something that we can use to create multiple pinball experiences. This particular platform is a machine with artwork that we can swap. I don't know if y'all can see this. Well, I guess you can with the camera. The artwork just peels right off. It's magnetic, so we can swap out the artwork. We can change the physical play field. We can pull out the physical shots, the ramps, loops, the targets, those kind of things, and drop in different modules to give you a different gameplay experience. We want to be like the Nintendo game console, but for physical pinball, where Nintendo sells a console and they develop games for it, and you can buy them and you can build up your game library. Farther, we want to let other people build games for this platform, just like Nintendo does with EA Sports and other companies that make games for their console. We're in the process of releasing a development kit that other people can download and use to create games for this platform. That'll include mechanical specs, it'll include software libraries and things people can use. It'll even include a lot of source code that we've developed and a lot of features we've developed to do that, to allow people to create games. Okay, so the first game we've developed for the platform is Lexi Lightspeed. And that's the game we're running in here. That's the game we're showing off in the game room over there. If you come over to the booth, if you've been over there already, or if you come over there later, you'll be able to play it. We have two machines. This is one of them. There's another one over there running now. But now when people first walk up to the machine, what they see is this new piece of technology we've created to make the experience more interesting. And we call it dynamic and interactive artwork. So we've taken the play field in the pinball machine, which is traditionally a painted piece of wood, and we've made it dynamic. So we can change what's happening, where you're looking while you're playing the pinball game. And so the big question is, why would we want to do that? Why would we want to change what you're seeing while you're looking at the play field while you're playing pinball? And the answer is because that's where you're looking while you're playing the pinball game. So we try to use this dynamic artwork to present information that you want to see while you're playing. So you walk up to the game, you see this dynamic artwork, and right now it's showing a bunch of things. In the center of the screen, you're seeing it, you know, iterate through the high score tables, and I can use the flipper button and iterate through a bunch of different achievements that we track. So things that traditionally be in the back box maybe that you'll see high scores and you'll see a couple lines of scores and names. We have a bigger area. We can put information, so we can put a lot more. You see the background changing behind it? It's cycling through what we call scenes in our game. We have a different background in this case. We're looking at that's the cabin scene, or that's the bar scene behind it, and there's a couple of other scenes that we cycle through. That's a area where the spaceship crash landed. Below that, we have, all the way down below the flippers, we have this box where we put free play into it. If it was on coin play, that's where you'd see the credits. It's just a way we can give you information about the state of the game. And then below that, and beside of it, you see these little tick marks and this thing changing numbers. And those are digital levels. So we have the technology inside the machine to tell you exactly what level, both incline and side-to-side level, the machine is. So if I push on the machine, you'll see them reacting to me doing that. And we can, of course, use that in the game in many different ways. We can just set up the level to, I don't know, disallow you from starting a game if it's too many degrees off of center. Or we can integrate nudging into the game where we detect the fact that you're shaking the machine, and we can integrate that into gameplay in different ways. We can, of course, use that for tilt detection and those kind of things. But technologies that we're using to create an interesting or a new kind of playing experience. So now I'm going to start the game and show you how we use the dynamic display inside of the game to create this more immersive playing experience. David will yell at me because the audio is so low and nobody can hear his work. The audio doesn't even matter. Who cares about audio? I mean during this presentation. Nobody cares about the audio while I talk about the video display. So what you see on the screen now, I've hit the start button. We get a box right in the center of the play field that says launch the ball. Right under that 1080p thing that we can't get off the screen. So player one launched the ball. You know what player's up. You know what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to launch the ball. Now when you launch the ball, what are you supposed to do? Or how are you supposed to launch the ball? We've got three buttons on each side. We've got two buttons on the front. What are you supposed to do? A lot of people walk up to the game and they say, what are all these buttons for? They're used to one or two buttons maybe on the side of a machine and they don't know what to do. So we've created what we call the button legend. And you can read exactly what you're supposed to do. And you'll see that it's telling you the red buttons are the flippers. So if I hit a button, the flippers go. And it's really loud right now because the glass is off. So when the glass is on, it's much quieter, as it should be. You'll see at the top of the playfield, you'll see these chevron stacks, which are representing traditional playfield inserts. But because they're on a dynamic display, we can change the colors, we can change the shapes, we can move them around, we can change the text. So we have text on them saying exactly what they mean right now. The right hole is lit for start mode. So what happens when you hit that shot, Dennis? It'll start a mode. Good job. Correct. When you shoot the left ramp, it's going to give you this thing we've got labeled alien skill shot. So the skill shot right when you launch the ball is a left ramp shot. And let's see, farther down the screen, we've got a highlight that's saying cabin. Cabin is identifying the mode that we have lit on the game. So if we shoot that start mode hole right now, it'll start the cabin mode. And one of the buttons is able to change the mode that we have lit. So one of the secondary buttons is a mode change button. We can hit the start button. The legend is telling us to add a player. We can hit the launch button to launch a ball. So standard stuff. On the inlanes and outlanes, we have these little circles with letters in them that traditional games have in an insert and a lamp underneath it for collecting, I don't know, I think it's fire in Medieval Madness and some other things in other games. So you can collect this letter when the ball rolls over that area, and you can cycle through them. We have a different button other than the flipper button to cycle the letters. It's called the lane change button. And then below the flippers, because the ball, while you're playing the game, you're trying to keep it above the flippers. And so the ball rolling over stuff, it would hide the information as it's rolling over it. So below the flippers is an area of the playfield where you're trying not to allow the ball into that area. So we took that space on the playfield and we put all of the information you need to know your status of gameplay as you play the game. So it's got the score. It's got the player number for multiplayer games. It's got your ball number. It tells you how many balls the game is. If you have it set to 5 ball, it would say 1 of 5. If you have it set to 1 ball, it would say 1 of 1. And then what you can't really make out right now in the camera is there's a bunch of little icons that are unlit right now because you haven't collected any of those things, but they're telling you your game status. Things you collect during the game will go and change those from unlit to lit. So if you specifically had all of those things lit, you would have basically completed the game, or you'd be ready to play the finale, and that would be it. All right, so that's the setup of the playfield. If I launch the ball comes out. I'm going to hold on to it just so I can demo some stuff. You see some more things. You'll see at the bottom of the screen, right above that scoreboard, we have this thing that says invincibility in 10. That's your ball save. And it's not counting down right now because the game's looking for the ball. I have the ball in my hand. It can't find it. So it's looking for the ball. It just ran a ball search. Now, when the ball drops onto the surface of the playfield, that invincibility started counting down. And if I drain the ball, the magical tractor beam comes down, grabs the ball, and relaunches it. So not only did that invincibility tell us that we have a countdown timer counting the ball save down, but we took that ball save mechanism, which is some obscure thing. You lost the ball. Why are you getting it back? We know we get it back because we're pinball players and we're experienced, and we know that some games give us the ball back after a while. But we use this dynamic artwork to create an animation that explains exactly why or how this ball is coming back to the player. In this scene, it was that tractor beam that comes down. In other modes, it'll be something else that's mode specific to show you why that ball is coming back. And you'll notice as I move the ball around, the screen is drawing a smoke trail behind the ball. That's why we call it a dynamic and interactive playfield, because we're tracking the position of the ball anywhere over the playfield surface so that we can theoretically have the physical pinball interacting with virtual targets. And we specifically do not do a lot of that in this scene. This is what we call the map scene. This is our home mode. And we want people to be able to walk up to this game and think of it as a traditional pinball machine, which generally has fairly static artwork, and it doesn't present a lot of interactive or dynamic things that distract you while you're playing. Now, when we go into the mode hole, it'll totally change the scene and other things will happen, and I'll do that in a second. But for right now, it's mostly static. We do have the traditional stuff, like the insert lamps or the chevron stacks that represent insert lamps and other things. We have the blinking light lock targets on each side of the playfield. If I hit those, I've already hit the lock ones. If I shoot the ball into the right ones, lock is now lit. We got this huge animation on the screen that told you exactly what happened because you hit that target. It lit lock. And now you'll notice we have this yellow chevron stack in the middle of the playfield pointing at the spaceship on the screen saying shoot this to lock. But not just that, it's saying lock ball one. So we know exactly how many balls are locked. We know exactly what we're supposed to do. And if we shoot that, it says on the screen, ball was locked. Yes, so we know we locked the ball. And now the chevron stack changed. So did the music. Yay, music. Now it says two ball multi-ball. Now I'm going to turn down the volume. Because we don't care about sound and music. So now it says two ball multi-ball. So we changed the meaning. We changed what that chevron stack looked like because the meaning of the shot changed. So now if we shoot that shot, it'd be a two ball multi-ball. But in this specific game, we could shoot the light lock target again. Lock is now lit. The chevron stack changed. Now it says lock ball two. So the screen is changing to show us what's happening in the game as we work through it. All that information is presented to you right in front of your eyes while you're playing it, and you don't need to search around for a display, or you don't need to take your attention away from gameplay as you're playing the game. All right, so now let's show a scene change. Let's go into something like the cabin scene. I shot the mode hole. The cabin scene starts. It tells you on the screen to fix the hyperdrive engine, launches the ball, and there's a big arrow saying, shoot this blue chevron stack, which are pointed to the ship to select a part. All the dirty parts are sitting behind Ronnie Earl on the floor behind the table. We shoot the shot. A part magically moves to the table. We now have a new instruction. It says repair part, and it's shooting directly at the part. If I shoot it with the ball, it flashes, he fixes it in a cloud of dust, and the chevron stack changed to the left loop, and now it says shoot the left loop to assemble the part. So we shoot the left loop. Wait for the pop bumpers to do their thing. Grab the ball out of the back. And now it says select the part again. So we shoot another part. We try to get the ball. Now it says repair the part. We repair the part. Now it says shoot the hole to assemble the part. We do that, and the mode ends, we got a big score, and everything else. So we use that dynamic display to help you play the game. We can change the level of information we give you, so there are options to, you know, give you a lot of instruction or give you just a little bit of instruction. If you're familiar with the game, you've played it a long time, or you own it, you know what to do. You might not want to see these instructions all the time. So we have gameplay options to allow you to turn those settings off. So one thing I want to talk about is the fact that, yes, we have all these dynamic things going on in the playfield. There's a lot of virtual stuff. It's a lot of information. But this is still physical pinball. We're all pinball people. We want to play physical pinball. It's got real flippers. Real flippers. Real slingshots. It's got real targets up at the top. It's calling me a cheater. It's calling me a cheater because I'm hitting the targets with my hand. And it knows I'm cheating. If I actually hit the flipper and rolled the ball at the screen into that target, it doesn't call me a cheater. But if I hit the target with my hand, it knows I'm cheating. And we can use that information a couple ways. We can use it in tournament gameplay to try to level the playing field, so to speak, between players. If one guy is playing the game with his hand and he's winning, that's probably not fair, I guess. Or we can use it in other ways. We can disable certain modes. Maybe you can't get to wizard mode if you're cheating. A lot of people take the glass off to get to wizard mode because they aren't able to get to it when they're playing a three-ball game or whatever. In this game, we could write code to disallow you from seeing wizard mode if you can't get there yourself. Play better. I don't know. All right, so now the right hole is no longer lit. The chevron stack has moved to the left or the right ramp. It now says light mode by shooting that ramp. We try to do this backwards, and we fail miserably. I'm going to switch sides with you. Shoot the ramp. Now the chevron stack changed to start mode again, and now it is lit for mode. I want to show one more mode, which is warehouse, to show some more stuff. Oh, I was talking about the physical features, the flippers, the sling slots, the targets. We have two ramps, a right ramp, a left ramp. We have three pop bumpers, which you saw the ball popping around earlier. We have the stand-up targets. So this game has 12 stand-up targets. It's got, honestly, just as many physical features as most traditional games. But it's also got this dynamic display, so we can use that display to enhance the physical experience. We're not creating a virtual game. We're creating a physical pinball game that we use with a dynamic display to enhance the experience. So one more physical feature we have. If I start this mode, TJ zoomed in because he knows what's going to happen. We call these things our walls and scoops. So in this mode, it's called the warehouse mode. We're in a warehouse. TJ's trapped. We're in a warehouse. So a warehouse doesn't make sense if it doesn't have walls. So this thing has a bunch of walls at the top of the screen. If I shoot them with the ball, it just bounces off the walls like a ball should. And we've also got this one open, and it's lit green. And we labeled it, you can barely see it on the floor, next room. Why would we have another room? Because in this particular mode, the goal is to roll over these crates with the ball and look for ship parts that we can collect and help Lexi repair her ship so she can fly away and escape from Earth. But there were no parts here, or there was one initially that I accidentally rolled the ball over. TJ's showing that it's in the apron LCD that we call it, the area where the apron typically is, where we have this LCD. But in this case, I'm going to shoot the next room shot. Another room comes up, and I did that just before our timer ran out, and now all of the doors are open, and it says exit the mode. Because the mode timed out, we can no longer go to next rooms and previous rooms. We can, if we're really good, try to hit little soft shots to try to hit these crates. And, ooh, look, there's a part, and we can roll the ball over the part and collect it, and we're good. So now all of the doors are open, and we shoot it, and we exit the mode. Pops the ball out, and we can keep playing. Okay, so that's generally, well, that's a description of most of the features in this game. And we have a lot of different modes. We use the modes in different ways. All of the modes, I'm draining the ball on purpose. We show a bonus screen, and then we go to the next ball. All of the modes are set up to be Almost all of the modes are set up to be physical pinball modes, where you're shooting a sequence of shots, ramps or loops or targets or the ship. And we use that virtual display, the dynamic playfield, to enhance that experience, to give story, to present a story behind the shots, to give you a reason, a thematic reason to shoot those shots. And once you play the game and you get over the fact that there's a lot of information being presented to you in front of your face, and you get over the overwhelming nature that you might feel the first couple of games, you get used to that information that's being presented to you, and you start to appreciate the fact that it's telling you what to do, you're feeling the story, you know what's going on, and you're working through that. Okay, so that's the gameplay. David, how far into this am I? How long?
That says 25 minutes.
Okay, 25 minutes. All right, so another innovation I want to talk about is, I heard, here it is. Well done. I should stop saying the word innovation, and then I won't have to give out T-shirts anymore. What, over here? He got me. Yep, we got one over here, BJ. All right. So that's gameplay. I'm going to abort this game real quick just by entering the service mode. The ship is unloading the ball that we locked in there. Talk about another feature we've developed to try to improve the playing and owning experience. I mean, the deal is that a lot of people like playing pinball together. It's a social game. People go out and they play pinball with each other. They have one in their home and they have people over and they play it. Pinball's a social game. But traditionally with pinball games, you put in a one-player, a two-player, a three-player game, and if you're different skill-leveled players, it's really not fair to play against each other. Somebody might be really good, and you might not be really good, or you might be really good, and you're playing against someone whose ball times are really short, and it might just not be fun to play against those people because one guy's playing 10-minute balls, and the other person's playing 30-second balls, and it's just not fun. So we've tried to implement features to hopefully make that experience more fun for people of different skill levels. So we've implemented a couple of features to try to do that. One of those, we call it player profiles. I'll try to do this with two hands, holding, I got it, thanks. So I bring up the profile menu, and there's three listed right now. I have an example already set up. We have two profiles, one called Dad and one called Kid. So imagine a scenario where there's a father who has got some kids. The father's good at pinball. He plays long ball times. The children are new to pinball. They're not so good yet, and they play really short ball times. So we've allowed them to log into the game, and we can change the settings for each player in the same game. So Dad can set the game up really hard. He's got to hit a lot more shots, or he's got really short ball save times, or whatever. And we can set it up fairly easily for the kids, or for the kids to play through pretty easy modes. So in this example, I'm just going to select a kid to start the game. The game starts. You notice it says in the center, it says, player one, kids, launch the ball. And down in the scoreboard area, it's highlighting the fact that there's a player now named kid. I'm going to add another player. I'm going to add, I'll add dad. Dad's player two. It says player two added. It still says number one kid, player one kid, launch the ball because it's player one's turn. And now in the scoreboard area, it's cycling between player one with a zero score and kid, and player two has a zero score, and that's dad. I'm going to add another player. Add kid. I should turn off the flippers while I'm selecting people. Okay, so now the scoreboard says there's two kids against dad. And one more kid. It's now a four-player game. There's three kids. There's one dad. And we can get started. So we're going to launch the ball. Player one kid steps up, launches the ball. I'm going to let the skill shot timeout. You notice the ball save started at 20 seconds because the kid needs a little help. He loses the ball quickly, so we gave him a long ball save. Alien shot says one of two. The kids only have to shoot one of two aliens. And I screwed up my whole demo because I was supposed to enable one more feature. You didn't tell me, TJ. TJ's like, you never told me what you were going to present, so how would I know to... I'll talk about it a little bit later. So, kid's up to bat. He's playing the game. We're going to drain his ball because he's really bad. Kids are no good at pinball. None of them ever. We actually have a kid who lives down the street. He's 5 years old from us, and he's better than pretty much all of us. He's the son of a tournament player, and I guess dad has taught him very well. Okay, so now it's player two's turn. It's dad. We're going to launch the ball. Notice the ball save started at, I think it was 8 seconds or 7 seconds. And it's counting down. Aliens are now one of eight because dad is set up to be a lot more difficult. So dad's now playing difficult rules. The kids are playing easy rules. And now I'm going to cancel the game and show you the feature that I really wanted to show you, which I screwed up and started the game and forgot to show you. Do this real quick. And after I present this little demo, we'll turn it over to David for some kind of audio-related something innovation. I don't know. Man, you guys are quick. All right, starting the test again, kid. Dad. Hi, Dad.
No.
No? Kid. Kid. All right, so now we've added the same players back in. Haven't launched the ball yet, so we haven't really started the game. I mean, having different skill levels, playing different settings is interesting, but the kids are still going to end their balls probably pretty quickly, and they're still probably not going to progress very well. So what we're going to do is enable this new feature that if TJ zooms in on the legend, that yellow button on the left, it says hold down the yellow button, hit the start button, and we'll start this thing called a team game. So I just did that. It now says team game enabled. Above the scoreboard, it now says team game. So we know exactly we're in a team game. And now if I launch the ball as a kid, I get the ball, I hit a shot, I get some points. And now look at the scoreboard. It says all the kids have 5,000 points. Because the kids are all playing on a team. They're playing against their dad. They're all not very good, so the settings are pretty easy. They can progress through the game. They're all playing together. They're playing a cooperative game. If we lock a ball as a kid, the ball's locked. It now says start a two-ball multi-ball. So we could start a two-ball multi-ball, but for the purpose of this demo, I'm going to drain the ball. Watch the bonus. It's now dad's turn. Player two, dad, launch the ball. Dad launches the ball. Ball save timer starts. We hit some stuff to get some points. The scoreboard says the kids all have 20,000 because they got a good bonus. The dad still has 5,000, so it's the dad against the kids. We are going to drain the ball. Dad's drunk, and he couldn't keep the ball alive. Dads shouldn't be drinking while playing pinball with their kids. Launch the ball. Now we're player three. Kid, launch ball. Notice on the play field, it says start a two-ball multi-ball. So kid number two, which is player number three, doesn't have to lock the ball because his teammate already locked the ball. So he can simply start a two-ball multi-ball. The balls slowly come out of the spaceship. We can bat them around with the flippers, miss all the jackpots, and let it time out. Oh, I hit a jackpot. Ball save is active. I should have done that. Actually, TJ's right. I think both flippers... No, both flippers are not enabled. Okay, never mind. All right, we're draining the ball. Multi-ball's over. Now it still says shoot one of two aliens. Multi-ball, we have to start locking again. We're just going to drain the ball for the demo. And we're going to go to player four. Yeah, player four was Little Johnny, but Little Johnny has a really short attention span, and he doesn't want to play anymore. So now we're kind of stuck. Johnny ran away. We're on player four. I actually don't know if this feature is going to work. I hope it does. Because player four is already in a team game and he's already got a score. But since Johnny ran away, he's no longer really part of the team. And we don't want to have to just plunge his ball and play through it, because then we're just sitting around doing nothing, waiting for the ball to drain. So we want to take Johnny out of the game. So theoretically, and the legend says we can do it, so clearly we can do it, because if the legend says we can, we can. It says hold the start button down for 2 seconds and it'll remove the player. So I held the start button for 2 seconds. It removed Johnny. It's now on player one. The scoreboard now says we have 3 players. We took Johnny out of the game, and now we can continue playing 2 kids against Dad and see who can win the game. So that's it. We added some features to allow people of different skill levels to hopefully compete against each other. And we've added this other thing called team games so that they can combine and play cooperatively against each other. The teams don't have to be even or odd. We could have 2-on-2 or 1-on-2 or whatever, any combination of players. The game actually supports up to 9 players, which is a little silly, but it supports it. So you could have an 8-on-1 or a 5 people versus 4 people, or you could do whatever you want. The trick is that all players that have the same profile name will be on the same team. So all the people that had the kid profile are on the kid team, and the person who had the other profile was on the other team. So that's it. A bunch of features. We'll take questions afterwards. Let me go to David real quick. But the bunch of features we've implemented on this dynamic play field to hopefully enhance the playing experience, make owning a machine more interesting and more valuable to people that want to, you know, play competitively with other people of different skill levels. And we've taken the dynamic display to give you more information while you're playing, create a more immersive experience, and apparently sounds do matter. So what I'm going to do is turn the sound. I'm going to turn the microphone over to the sound guy, David Thiel, and let him talk about how we're using technologies to... Oh, closing the door. There is a lot of sound, and it'll be louder in here after you close the door. I care very much about the sound. Hi, David. How you doing?
I'm much maligned. Why?
Well, you. All right, David Thiel, everybody, the audio guy.
Hello, thank you very much. Nice to be here for my second expo ever. How are you doing for this last seminar? Of course, they saved the best for last. I'm here because a lot of reasons. And I never lose an opportunity to share pinball audio when it can be heard. It's sometimes hard in the hall or in your collections when 6 people are playing, plus they put the boombox on. Okay, so I'm working in this context with Jerry as a client, and it's an advanced context. It's got a lot of nice properties for me so that I can make stuff that makes the game, forget immersive, more fun. And several decisions that have been made by Jerry and Multimorphic that benefit me in trying to make it more fun. There's economies of scale. Multimorphic is based on a computer that was made and designed in Korea or China or somewhere, and they made 1 million copies of it, and they can sell it reasonably cheaply, and it's like got a lot of power. I've come from previous environments where it was a proprietary thing that, you know, like 2 guys in Bensonville designed and wasn't as powerful. So what's fun about that? Well, there's plenty of resources. There's lots of RAM, and there's lots of storage, and lots of CPU. And why do you care about that? What's fun about that? Well, that means that all the things that I create, all the music, sound effects, and call-outs, are in Glorious Stereo. And they're like in CD quality. And I can have pretty much as many as I can develop in the amount of time that I have to develop the game. This is a good thing. Yeah, next. Oh, that's out of order. Yeah, we're still moving forward. Okay, Lexi Lightspeed Music. So there's three chunks of stuff that I want to talk about, things I've done for Lexi that are kind of unique to Lexi. One, this is an original theme. The closest I've come to an original theme in previous projects was sort of Mustang, because, well, Mustang was a picture of a car and really had nothing associated with it. So Mustang's kind of an original theme as regards to sound, but this is a very rich and interesting metaphor, as suggested by Dennis, and it's fun. It's fun and challenging to create music for an original theme, because I've got to capture your imagination. You haven't spent 2 hours in a theater getting all involved with aliens or some other stuff. And when you play this, I've got to try to capture your attention in a way that entertains you just right away and works with this theme. So it's a challenge, but it's great fun. All the music is based on three notions. We have an alien adventurer named Lexi Lightspeed and her furry pal Lookie. So there's music that's obviously kind of spacey and alien and stuff. They crash because they are shot down in the Florida swamp. So some of the music and environments and scenes and modes are based on being in kind of a shit-kicking environment with a lot of water. And then the third element that defines all of this is Area 53.1, which is obviously the villain and the evil government agents. So I've made a montage of about 80% of the music, and it'll take 3 minutes. Now we're shit kicking. We'll be right back. Ah, oh, gee shucks, thanks. That last is the high score music, so I hope you get there.
Everybody liked it but Dennis.
Yeah, he left, right? Yeah, okay. So another thing about the P3 platform and Jerry's approach, which I think benefits me to make fun for you, is that this is an open platform based on stuff. It's not a proprietary platform. I have other clients who have chosen to use a motherboard from China, but everything else about their system is closed, and all the tools have to be developed by them for themselves. And that, you know, every hour you spend developing tools for yourself means you're not developing games. When you choose a different approach and take game tools from the development community, Jerry's currently using Unity, which is something you can download. And it's a very powerful engine used for video games to do 3D graphics and game rules and stuff. And that's part of the system that drives the pinball machine. And he didn't have to write that. He can just get that and use that. And other developers don't have to start from scratch building up all their infrastructure. For audio, there's a plugin for that called Master Audio that further augments Unity and gives me a lot of cool things that I can do that didn't have to be developed, and I didn't have to beg a programmer at my client site, you know, please give me a way to set up audio groups so that when you hit a slingshot, I don't play the same damn sound every time. So, this is a good thing, allowing me to be innovative. But I don't know if that counts. See, he told me not to say innovation. Oh, shit. Was innovation the word I wasn't supposed to say? Okay, well, I innovation is like four syllables. I'm sorry. And I really wanted to concentrate on fun instead of innovation. Okay, so part of the properties, the things of this cool development environment give me are things I don't have on other platforms, like the ability at runtime to change the pitch or let the programmer change the pitch on some of the assets I'm playing. You know, if I'm playing music in C, we could play it in C sharp or D or whatever and do that dynamically. I can't do that anywhere else. So we've used that. I've used this before. You know, when I used to synthesize stuff, we've used that to make things, to communicate information to you. It's getting more exciting, it's getting more tense, time is running out, accomplish your goal. And for timed modes, Jerry's bumping up the pitch on some of these things, so I have an example of that. Where it's the swamp scene where you're supposed to be collecting Lookie's gaseous emissions and use them for fuel. And you only have a finite amount of time to do that. Deep in the swamps in Florida. Ooh! Collect that gas. Uh-oh. Get down. Get funky. Get back up again. Ah, it's about time to grab your ankles. So, you know, interactive music, yeah, as a concept, it's a nice thing. It's only good from my point of view, when it's functional, when it's like working in the back of your brain and making you get more excited, getting more involved. And that's the immersion that I'm into. Yeah. Another property of this advanced environment that's cool is this is a stereo system, right? And there are a few stereo systems now. I have other clients who have stereo systems. I do. Who pay me? But I do have other clients, but spatializing things for them, everything has to be pre-rendered. I have to make sounds that are, you know, if there's a thing on the left side, I have to pre-render a version. And if there's one on the right, I have to make a version of that pan far to the right. And if there's one in the middle, I have to make yet another version. And God forbid there was a dynamic one where something moved around. This advanced environment allows the programmer to take one version of the sound and place it wherever it is in space. So here's an example of some of those. And of course, this is mono. Imagine stereo. The laptop is stereo. Okay, and the last thing is this sort of master audio business allows me to make what we call sound groups easy. I never want you to hear the same sound twice in a row. I mean, I may only give you four versions, but when you hit a slingshot, when you hit a target, even if it's the same event, in reality, you never get the same sound result twice. It'll be the same recognizable thing, but it's always a little different because reality's kind of funky. And if you do that, if I get lazy and give you one sound, the third time you hear it, you feel uneasy. You go, oh, that's bogus. That's digital. That's nonsense. So it's more engaging. It's more immersive. Screw it. It's more fun. So I just made a slide of, I made a little movie of some of the sounds. Some of the call-outs. The call-outs are the thing that are least mature in this project because we don't have a script yet. And all that business hangs off a really good script. And the call-outs so far are me. But that will be remedied soon, as soon as we figure out what we want them to say. Wow, that was innovation. I guess we've given up on that. No, come on, wake up. So, I'm done. The last slide for which I have no notes. Oh, it says that. Yeah, why am I here? I have other clients. I'm a busy guy. In 2013, Jerry brought his show to the Northwest, where I am, to the Pacific Northwest Game and Arcade Show. And I saw this thing for the first time, and I was intrigued. I've done 25 audio packages, and I always have the game at my house to test it on and stuff, so I've played a little pinball. And, you know, this is remarkable. This is cool. This is an advancement in potentially, you know, what we know that could be as big as going from seven segment displays to dots, or maybe even adding flippers. I don't know. There's an awful lot of depth here and a potential to do incredible things. And frankly, I like Lexi. I think it has reached critical mass, and it is a lot of fun. But you have to have imagination when regarding this platform and imagining game 2 and 3 and 4 with all kinds of cool people getting to put stuff on this display, leveraging ball tracking, using the scoops, designing new play fields on the top, popping them out and popping new ones in. I'm excited, and that's why I'm supporting this platform. I think it's going to be absolutely terrific. So it's a wholehearted recommendation for Jerry and his efforts, which are incredible, to bootstrap a company in the manner that he is attempting to do. So that's it. Thank you very much. Questions?
When you pick these sounds out, what are your influences like with pinball machines that you would say, like, what are your influences? That's the way I want to do it. Or do you say, I want to be completely different than what's already out there? You as a sound person, how do you think? And what makes a successful game machine with sound?
What makes a success? How do I think and what makes a successful? Gosh, that's so thoughtful. I don't know if I ever approach it that way. I approach it as everything that's good in a game design, how it flips, how it looks, the theme that was chosen. I am an amplifier. And so I try to take whatever's here and make it more tangible, make it more real, to elaborate it. So they have a picture of a swamp down here. So, you know, with Lookie running around and farting. What could I do to make that more visceral for you? Well, some nasty-ass slide gas guitar. You know. So that's how I think. I mean, and the other thing I always strive to do, because you're going from place to place to place, and it's important that there be contrast between the places you're going, because one of the functions of every background that's here is for you to stand to the side, close your eyes, and I can say, oh, the player's in the swamp scene. Oh, the player's enabled for multi-ball. Oh, we're back to main play. And the only way you can truly make that message unambiguous is to have a lot of contrast. So they want to be different. So, you know, this body of work kind of sounds like it's all over the place, right? There's some space music, and there's some rock and roll, and there's some swamp music and stuff. And but that's done really on purpose to help the player understand where they are and to also amplify the sense of, make it visceral. Actually, the thing you may not notice, it's a little subtle, but in the main play music, as part of the music, there are crickets and frogs and stuff to, you know, put you into the swamp, except they're in time, so they're on quarter notes and stuff. They are percussion, but they are also a sound effect. You know, where the line between where music stops and sound effects begin is really an arbitrary nonsense. It's just whatever works. And in interactions and in pinball specifically, I have always, you know, I don't care if a giant fart is a great piece of percussion, I'll use it. If it's appropriate, you know, if it's Family Guy and we're in fart multi-ball, that's part of the music. More questions? This is for Jerry.
The side art that's magnetic, do you have a plan on how to keep that on in a clean-out environment and not in a bad environment?
So the question was, our magnetic side art, how do you keep people from ripping it off, stealing it, and taking it home in a location-based environment? Yes, we do. David's stealing it right now. David's going to... No, never mind. Yeah, we're going to release a trim kit that we can... that you can apply to the cabinet on all the edges of the side art so that it protects the edges. So in order to get it off, you'd have to slice it with a knife. And if you slice it with a knife, why would you want to take the artwork home? For those of you who couldn't see that side, the trim kit will go on the edges of the artwork and it'll go all the way around the cabinet. So... whether we screw those from the outside or the inside or of the cabinet is to be determined, but yeah, we'll protect that artwork for you. Go ahead. Oops, sorry, David.
Player profiles. I presume that this is something that is carrying over. If you install a different game in there, you can have the same player profiles.
So the question is, do the player profiles persist across game changes? Hopefully, yes, they will.
Okay. So the next question is, are you recommending that we do generic roles like kid, put individual people into roles, or to actually profiles per person?
Are we recommending you put particular people into a group kind of summary profile or create names? You can do whatever you want. I don't know. I mean,
you could exploit it either way.
So we could potentially even add groups for you. You can have Johnny and Billy and Bobby, and you could create a family group or something. I don't know. We may, you know, enhance the features at some point. Right now, the concept is pretty simple. You put in a name, and you can change the settings. Whether that's a group name or a individual name is up to you. But yeah, it's a new feature, and I'm sure as we get it out there and people start using it, we'll get some feedback. It'd be better if it had these enhancements and whatnot, and we'll certainly take. I mean, we built our company based on people's feedback. Really, we announced something many years ago, and it looked very different than this, and it had a lot of different features, and we've gotten feedback, and a lot of people liked some things, and a lot of people didn't like some things, and we take that feedback, and the things that we agree with, we implement. The things that we don't agree with, we T-shirt. You're not vocal or funny enough or something.
So the third part, would you be gathering any statistics that would allow the game to set the appropriate levels for a designated player? You know, you name the player Johnny, and then you gather statistics about Johnny and starts to adjust the settings on its own.
The question is, will the game potentially, or will we implement a feature that allows the game to adapt to a person's playing style or skill or whatever? That's a good idea. I don't know if we'll implement that or not, but it's a good idea. Is it a T-shirt worthy experience? It's a cool idea.
Dude, the only problem with that is the Robotron effect. You know that, right? So Robotron, if you walk up to it, put a quarter in it, and you run around and shoot Mom, and don't try to kill anything as long as you can in the first round, the game thinks you're not good.
Oh, yeah.
And then the remaining round, the next three rounds are way easy.
Yeah.
So then you scam that and you know, make your life, you get deeper into the game because you killed Mom, tried to kill Mom. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, all features. Every time somebody recommends or we think about a feature, it always sounds cool right away. And when you think about it a lot more, maybe it really is cool, and maybe it makes sense to implement it once you think about all the ramifications of doing it, and maybe it doesn't. So I say it's a cool idea because it is. It's a really cool idea, and maybe we'll implement it. Maybe it won't make sense to implement it, but yeah, we'll certainly think about it. I like it. Yes. Have I thought about whether, or have we thought about whether we can play against a computer? So it's a cool question, because a couple years ago I created a short little video demo of a self-playing pinball machine where I drew a virtual section around the flippers and I said, whenever the ball gets into this region, flip. And it was actually funny to watch the machine try to play itself. We absolutely want to do that. I mean, there's lots of reasons to do it. Maybe you can integrate an auto flip into the game so it helps you hit a particular shot once you collect some kind of power-up mechanism that will help you hit a shot. Or, yeah, having the game run a demo where it's playing itself, or being able to play against a computer might... I don't know if that's interesting or not. But once we implement auto-playing capabilities, then certainly turning a player onto an auto-play mode certainly would be interesting. I keep saying the word certainly. I should have vetoed the word certainly. That's also a cool idea, and it's something we absolutely want to do. My dream feature for this game, I've told a bunch of people, is I want to teach the game how to do a live catch. And I want to be able to sit back and just watch the flipper automatically do a live catch whenever it wants to. So yeah, we have the data to do it. We have the technology to do it. We've innovated enough to give us those features to do it.
Oh!
In the back. And we want to implement that for sure. Yeah. But then it gets interesting, because like, when you program a mode, you're supposed to hit the left. Again, it's back to the question before and the ramifications of implementing a feature like that. Once you implement an autoplay mechanism, do you have to then go into the modes, me, the programmer, do I have to go into the mode and say, if the computer's supposed to be really good, how long does it take for him to hit this shot? Or do we add in some kind of variability so he can, I mean, theoretically, he should always hit the shot. He should never miss. So do we add in the variability or some kind of randomizer to make him miss some percentage of times? Or, I mean, it gets a little more complicated when you think about it in terms of implementing a well-thought, thorough feature, but it's a cool idea for sure.
It's too bad that, you know, like, game only have team assists. I was thinking instead of playing against a computer, how about the computer can sort of help you? Like, you're about to hit the flippers and says, no, just wait a half a millisecond later, and then just...
Yeah, so the idea is the computer doesn't let you do things that might be bad at the time. Don't flip this way or that way or whatever. That gets into another interesting gameplay and personal experience user interface questions. But, yeah, are you going to get mad when it's telling you not to do something and you think you know better than the computer, so you're upset because it didn't let you do something? Yeah, it gets a little weird, but it's certainly an interesting – it's certainly a certainly interesting word. Yes. There was another question over here. Yes, Ryan.
First of all, thanks, David, for making some great sound packages. Really incredible.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
Sound matters.
You heard it.
I wanted to ask Jerry, is it possible to have different types of profiles all on the same team? Like, instead of a kid team profile, have kid 1, 2, 3 at all different ability levels against...
So the question is similar to the other question about, do you create profiles that are the same name or groups, or can you have individually named profiles that are then grouped together? You can't currently today. It's a new feature, though, and like I said, we'll get feedback from people like you who have these ideas on how to enhance the feature, and certainly, we can certainly think about certainly adding that feature. Yeah, certainly. Thanks. Other questions? Yes. The question is, are these disgustingly ugly, Scott? Oh, these awesome graphics that are on the machine. Actually, Scott Gullis from Wrath of Olympus did the artwork for this game. He's sitting there in the back row. Is what we're looking at today going to ship with the game? And yes, it is. The interesting thing about this package, this platform, is that if you want different artwork, or if we come out with a second set of artwork, or if you think you can do it better, or you have a different idea, you don't want to see these characters, you want to see different characters, or whatever, you can literally go to your local print shop, pay them $150, and get a set of things printed, assuming, of course, you have the artwork developed. And get a new set of artwork and stick it on your cabinet. Or it doesn't have to be Lexi related. You could go get Billy's Arcade written on the side of your cabinet. Oh, the Playfield artwork is what we're looking at in the Playfield. Well, I gave Scott credit for something that isn't even related to Scott. The Playfield artwork, yes, is also. We have a full-time graphic artist who's familiar with game engine development. And yeah, he's creating all the assets for the Playfield. This game is, I feel like this game is about 90 to 95% complete. What we're adding to the game shortly is this, the voice calls that David mentioned, and some more flash and polish and better light shows. The graphics themselves, we're adding a few more animation sequences. The wizard mode David kind of showed in one of his music reel, I think, is being enhanced with more graphics and things. But yeah, the backgrounds and the features are pretty well going to be it. But like the artwork on the side of the cabinet that Scott Gullick's made, the awesome artwork that is cool, certainly. We can change that. We can change if we ship the game and two people buy it, and the rest of the 10,000 people that said they were going to buy it don't buy it, and they say that it was because of the Playfield artwork, then we have something to change and go redo. But it's a computer, so all we have to do is upload a new image to the machine, and it swapped itself. You saw the game react to the scene changes and things. It took about 1 second to load the new scene. It takes a second because we intentionally fade out the previous scene, and so 10 millisecond Playfield artwork changes. Yes, question.
An option for a back box display.
Are we going to have a back box display? The answer is yes. I don't know when. We need to get the machine out, but yes, absolutely on locations, certainly. Locations need a back box display to, you know, to attract people and to give people standing around the machine something to look at. Yeah, absolutely. We definitely want to do that. We don't know when we're going to get to it because we have some higher priority things, but yes. Question from BJ, who is a software developer on our team.
You demonstrated the removal of the player. You were in profile all the time. Is that only available when using profile?
BJ is subtly telling me to describe more about the team, the player removal. The player removal feature, it doesn't matter if you're in team mode or if you're in profiles or if you're just sticking up, hitting the start button to get new players into the game. The player removal button always works. The only caveat is once you've plunged the ball and started the game for that player, the game won't let you remove that player, which is done on purpose so someone can't accidentally remove another player from a game or on purpose, because Michael probably would. If he's losing, he'd probably delete the player that's beating him or something. But yeah, it's available at any time until you plunge that player's ball. Yes, Michael.
So if I decide that I don't like something about the game, I can just reprogram Lexi, right? I can use the overplay field and use all those maps to reprogram the game.
If you don't like the material we present, then there's something wrong with you. But if you love it already and want to make it even better. Yes, we are. My plan is to open source, to release the source code and the free assets for every game that we create that isn't licensed. So all original games we develop, we intend to release the source code. So anyone talented enough or who has friends who can do that kind of work can absolutely download the source code, modify it. Unity, the platform we use, the game engine we use to develop the games, is a... It has free trials, or you can get a license for it, or whatever. They're changing their pricing model, so I'm not exactly sure how to describe it right now. But you can download that, and you can use it. You can recompile the game. You can do whatever you want with it. Yeah, I don't think we can do that for licensed themes when we do licensed themes, but yes. So one of the things I didn't demonstrate today, we've demonstrated it in the past. I didn't do it today because we had some other material to present, is all the modularity of the system and how we remove play fields. And I kind of showed the artwork, but I didn't show a lot of the serviceability features that the game has. It's super easy to clean this thing. You can replace parts. We have a motto that says, never take your soldering iron to the game. Take the component you need to fix to your soldering iron. So there's a lot of things that are connectorized. There's a lot of things that slide in and out of the machine. I'm not going to show that right here, but at 4 o'clock today, so a couple hours later in the game room, I'm going to do a serviceability demo. So if you're around the game room or you want to see that, you want to see us, you know, swap play fields and show you some of the features, we'll do that in the game room. Just come and group around the machine and we'll show you how to do all that stuff. Any other questions? Yes?
I'm going to put you on the spot, Jerry.
Put me on the spot, John.
When are we going to see this thing in production?
Tomorrow.
Bye.
Yesterday?
When's
it going to be ready? When's it going to be in production? We are, of course, working as hard and fast as we can. I'm not going to give you a date because I don't want to be the guy who gives a date and has to not hit that date, which I've done before. So I am that guy. I don't want to be that guy anymore. We're hoping to reach production about 6 months. The game's pretty well developed. The machine is going to look much like this. We're iterating on a lot of the mechanical stuff that you can and can't see. There's a lot of stuff underneath the playfield that we're changing to make it more reliable, to make it more manufacturable, to make sure we can sell it for a price that makes sense. So all that still has to be done. But yeah, we're hoping about 6 months before we can announce production.
Hurry up, TJ.
Hurry up, TJ. Hurry up, everybody. David says we're done. David says get up. Extra half hour? We're a half hour late? That's because the questions are so good. Oh, yeah. So the reason there's noise, the reason they close the door is because the autograph session is next door. So if anyone wants to go get somebody's autograph, then go that way. Thanks, guys, for showing up. Appreciate it.